On September 29th, six other individuals also take Tylenol and end up going to the hospital and passing away within a couple of days. So all of these events happen in about 3 days, and they're all happening in Chicago and Chicago neighborhoods. Hi, I'm Trevor Craig, and I'm a scientist.
Hi, I'm Brittany Hansen, and I'm a pop culture enthusiast. And this is OK, But Why?, a Microback Laboratories podcast about science and pop culture.
Hi, everyone. I'm Trevor Craig.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brittany Hansen.
And this is OK, But Why?, and we are launching into our third episode. How are you doing today, Brittany?
I'm doing well. I'm really excited to hear about the topic today.
I have been studying so much for this one. Watching documentaries and reading articles and just cruising around trying to get as much of this information as possible. And it's kind of fun, but it's also work because I'm taking copious notes while I'm doing it. And it's I'm going to have to start back charging my Paramount Plus login information to the company.
Before we jump into it, do you mind telling us a story about why we started the podcast?
Yeah. So OK But Why? Was kind of birthed from Microback's launch of our new slogan, which actually is out a couple years ago, is a better world one test at a time, where we were branching out to not just be a testing company, but be an educational company that is looking to teach everybody about things, not just about testing, but why we do testing and what's out there and how to be safe and how to control products and, you know, all those things that are really, really important, not just to the businesses that we serve, but also people who can be listening in or just want to know more about those things and how their products are kept safe.
Perfect. Yes, I know. And then we were discussing how to do that and met with our PR team when I first started. And the common question that you were getting was, okay, but why is this happening? Okay, but why? And so that's kind of how this podcast was birthed. I made a joke on our first few episodes about how we switched from make the world better one test at a time to make the world more informed one episode at a time. So maybe we'll adopt that.
Yeah, I'm into that as our particular podcast slogan too. And I think in case anyone hasn't listened to the other episodes, I come from a science background. I come from a testing world background. And so I was providing all this information to people who were not from that background, but were trying to help a testing company like Microback kind of expand. So that's where it kind of started from, is me being really interested in these topics because it had to do with my day-to-day lab work, and then other people being like, wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And as the marketing manager here, I really appreciate all your help through social and email marketing and PR. And this is just another way to reach new customers and consumers.
Yeah. If you follow myself or Brittany or Microback on any of our social platforms, you'll probably see how many articles we publish out there that are not just about testing, but also about kind of fun things. We do articles about recalls and I guess that's not too fun, but also things about like food safety and like cutting boards. We've talked about that one. We've talked about like blowing out candles. So just some stuff that kind of comes up. We try to touch base on as many topics as we can.
Awesome. Let's get into this week's episode.
Okay, so my first question is for you, actually. I'm turning it around on you today.
Oh.
I know, we're just mixing it up here. and I even have a prop for you. Okay. When you go to Target, Walgreens, the grocery store, and buy medication, vitamins, even some basic food, what do you expect when you take it home?
Oh, what do I expect? I expect it to be safe. I expect it to be tested and approved and to do what it says it's going to do.
Okay, great. And one of the ways that we talk about it keeping safe, and you probably recognize this, is there's always those warnings on things that say if the seal is broken or if the lid is pushed out, like do not use.
Yes.
Well, today I'm going to talk to you about where that came from.
Okay.
So we're actually going to talk about the Tylenol murders. And this happened in 1982 over the course of a couple of days. And it basically changed how we receive products. So I had to go before we start recording and grab the pill bottle just to see what it says exactly. But it says on the front of it, do not use if seal under bottle cap imprinted with sealed for your protection is broken or missing. And that is on all customer products. You will see that on I looked through all my stuff before we started today. You see it almost every type of pill that is a medicine. You will see it on vitamins. You will see it on food. You'll see it on like the top of like canned goods, like if it's bulging or if the seal is broken, not to use it. And it's even on the outside of my soda bottle, which I checked before we started as well.
Wow.
And that is not an old concept. I mean, it's about 40 years old that that is a thing that exists. It really didn't start until the mid 80s, and it really wasn't implemented as a law until the 90s. And wow. What we're going to talk about today is the tragedy that happened that kind of kicked this off.
Okay. As someone who struggles with chronic headaches, I'm very interested and invested in the story now.
I've got some bad news for you right off the bat. Okay. So on September 28th, and this is in 1982, 12-year-old Mary Kellerman stayed home from school because she wasn't feeling well. Her parents let her stay home. They told her to go take some Tylenol. She had a headache. And within minutes, she collapsed and had to be taken to the hospital. She passes away the next day. On September 29th, six other individuals also take Tylenol and end up going to the hospital and passing away within a couple of days. So all of these events happen in about 3 days, and they're all happening in Chicago and Chicago neighborhoods.
Oh, the Midwest. So, okay.
I know. It's very scary. So let me tell you a little bit about the victims, because like you said, everyone kind of pops a couple pills when they have a headache or anything. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what happens to a lot of these people. So I might get these out of order. I didn't put them in chronological order. I just talked about them in general. So Adam Janis was not feeling well. He takes off from work that day. He goes and picks up his kids. He gets home and says he's going to take a couple pills, lie down. He collapses in just a few minutes. His family takes him to the hospital, where he passes away later that day. His brother and his sister come home from the hospital, obviously mourning. They aren't feeling well. His brother has back pain. She has a headache. They take Tylenol from the same pill bottle. They both collapse and pass away within a few hours.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it gets worse. Mary McFarland tells a coworker that she's not feeling good. She goes to a Walgreens, buys Tylenol, takes some pills. She collapses within a few minutes, dies within a couple of hours. Mary Reiner had just given birth to her fourth child. She's at home recovering. The doctors tell her to take Tylenol if she's dealing with pain. She takes some. She collapses and passes away within a few hours as well.
No.
The next day, Paula Pierce is discovered passed away in her home. She is a flight attendant, and she is found collapsed within a few feet from an open Tylenol bottle.
Okay. A lot of people are adding up here now at this point.
Yes. So this is very, very quick. It's within a few days. And the kind of the only thing that really kicks this off are the three family members that are the Janis families. They all go to the same hospital. And a nurse there, Helen Jensen, who is kind of a hero in the story, goes to their household to kind of investigate what's going on. She discovers a Tylenol bottle with a receipt, and she notices that pills are missing. And she automatically says, something's not right here. There are six pills missing. You know, most people take two at a time. There are three people dead. It was purchased today. They took it today. All three of them probably took it today. Something's going on. She calls a lead investigator and tells him her suspicion. And he's like, well, it's Tylenol. Tylenol's not dangerous. It's not a big deal, whatever. But he's smart and follows up with a Dr. Edmund Donahue, who is the deputy chief medical examiner for Cook County in Chicago. And he immediately suspects something is going on, and he asks the investigator to smell the bottle. When he smells the bottle, he says it smells like almonds, which is a clear sign of cyanide.
Oh, no.
Yes. So immediately, they suspect that these pills were tampered with or that they have cyanide in them. They test the pills, and they find out four of the remaining 44 pills in the bottle contain cyanide, and it's three times the fatal dose. They hold a press conference right away telling the public not to take Tylenol for the time being. And it gets pretty serious. Police are going down neighborhood streets with loudspeakers announcing this because people are dying so fast from this because it's three times the dose. They don't know what's causing it. There's not great treatments for this type of poisoning. And it happens really quickly because the dosage is so high. So even treatments aren't going to be effective. And they're trying to spread it out as fast as possible.
What form does cyanide come in? Is it a liquid or
Ooh, let me scroll ahead so I can tell you about this because I definitely wrote it down because I knew you were going to ask me about it. Okay, so cyanides, there's lots of different types of cyanides, are naturally produced by bacteria, fungi, algae. Some plants produce them. They cause other animals not to eat them because they make you sick. There are even some bugs that produce cyanide.
Oh my God.
And it comes in a lot of different forms. It's normally bound to another chemical, and it is usually a white powder. It looks a lot like sugar. And it is highly soluble in water. So you hear lots of cyanide poisoning that can happen through food because it's really easy to hide. It has a pretty bitter taste. It tastes pretty bad, but it has an almond-like smell, but it's easy to mask it with other foods. So it occurs naturally in the environment.
Yep.
One of the things you probably, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but it's still something that I do interviews about, are when people are making smoothies and things like that to include seeds from like apples. Yeah. And peach, or not peaches, peaches have a big core, but other fruits, but a lot of those hard woody seeds contain cyanide in them.
Oh, no.
It's in trace amounts, so you'd have to eat quite a bit of it for it to be a bad situation, but you still don't want to include those types of things. And now they have like juicers and stuff that you can basically drop a whole apple in and it gives you the juice. So you shouldn't be at risk then as long as you're not really crazy consuming a lot of them, but that's where it comes from. Most of the time you see cyanide poisoning, it's potassium cyanide. Again, it is looks like sugar, is highly soluble, meaning it goes into solution, so there's not a white powder at the bottom of your drink or anything like that. And it's still used in a lot of actual activities, but it's not used for like medicine. It's used in a lot of industry stuff, although they're pulling away from it because it's pretty dangerous.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so at the same time, they have this bottle from the one house. They also, by chance, the medical people who came to pick up Mary Kellerman, who is the young girl who passed away, also kept the bottle of Tylenol from her house. And they discover they all come from the same lot number. And then Johnson & Johnson, who owns Tylenol, immediately issues a recall from that lot number because they don't know what the cause is. They still are not sure what's happening there. At this point, they don't think it's being tampered with. They think it might just be the entire lot. So they recall that lot. But then when they start to get a suspicion, they look at other bottles of Tylenol from other places, and they find out it is from a different lot or a different couple of lots. So then the recall is expanded to cover those lots and any bottles of extra strength capsules. And capsules is really important here. And they say just in Chicago areas, and it's one of the largest pharmaceutical recalls ever. And it's really big. And one of the things I have to say here, and I'll talk about this more, is Johnson & Johnson was really, really cooperative, and they were like ahead of it. They not only were recalling these right away, but they started making connections with Chicago police, the FBI, the FDA, because they were very concerned about this. And we'll talk about how much this cost them as a company later on, but this was huge. It's one of the largest pharmaceutical recalls. It might be the largest one ever to happen still.
So at this point, we don't have seals on them. So anyone could just open the bottle and like put something in them.
Yes. At this point, everything you buy from a grocery store that's over the counter just has a piece of cotton in the top. That's it.
Okay.
So that's where things start to go awry.
Okay.
They then look into it and kind of are doing further research, and they find out that the bottles were purchased from all over. So they weren't just purchased at one store. They were purchased at a Jewel Foods, which is kind of like a CVS, a couple of different drugstores, a Walgreens, and they were kind of found all over. And then another bottle was purchased from a different store, but the woman who had it didn't take it because she said it had an off odor. And she ends up being the wife of a judge. So there's lots of cases where people are discovering these bottles that could be dangerous and they're not out there. So they're just yanking them off the shelves. They're telling people to throw them away actually not telling them to throw them away. They're telling them to do other things, keep them and or trade them in so that they can use them in investigation. In an effort to reassure the public, Johnson & Johnson releases warnings to hospitals and halted Tylenol production and all their advertising. In fact, they actually do opposite advertising where they say that there's a concern and that if you have these bottles to turn them in, they will give you new bottles and all those things. But obviously this is a huge impact on them.
Right.
And then there's other incidents that include strychnine, which was added to a Tylenol bottle in California, which issues then it to become a nationwide event. This is where it becomes the largest recall ever. So they issued this recall on October 5th. And remember, the first death happens on September 29th. So they move pretty quickly here. 31 million bottles are in circulation that they recall, and it has an estimated value of $100 million, which is about $303 million in 2022. I didn't investigate what 2024 differences are. I'm sure there's some inflation cost differences there.
So at this point, how many people are dead?
Seven.
Okay.
Or seven in the Chicago area. Okay. There are some copycat events that start to happen in other places, though. We'll get into that in a little bit more. So Johnson & Johnson is extremely cooperative. They are taking the hit. They know it's going to be bad for them. They recall all of these pills. They stop advertising. They tell people they will exchange capsules they've already purchased for new capsules that have been tested. And then the police are out there warning people. Customs at airports were asking people if they bought Tylenol medicine with them, so to make sure that they weren't bringing in any contaminated pills because they just didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Again, police are going down the streets telling everybody what's going on. It's huge. They find out that the lots, and there's three different lots that they find, came from two different states. One was produced in Pennsylvania, and I think two were produced in Texas, which means it's probably happening after production because otherwise it would all be in one place and it would be all the bottles, and it's not all the bottles.
Right.
The police start to think that someone had taken the bottles from shelves at local stores, take them home, tampered with the pills with potassium cyanide, and then take it back to stores where people purchase it and then take them home with tampered pills. In addition to the five that led to victims' deaths, because one family had one bottle that killed three people, they find a couple other contaminated ones all over Chicago that they're like, okay, something's going on here. So we already talked about cyanide. Strychnine is another one that was shown up in these bottles. And they found in other places contaminated bottles that had strychnine in them. And strychnine is a colorless, highly toxic that's used in pesticides. And it's mostly used for vertebrates like birds and rodents. Strychnine poisoning is very, very serious. People have issues with it because it is still used in some pesticides and sometimes animals that we don't want to get into it. And it comes from a tree as well. But normally it's factory produced for the specific purpose as a pesticide.
Okay.
All the pills were capsules, which is a big deal. They were advertised for a long time. And maybe you remember these commercials. I remember these commercials where the capsules are like two pieces put together. And in certain commercials, they will show the capsule being broken apart and like the little beads coming out. Mm-hmm. And they talk about how fast acting it is.
Yep.
If you notice, you don't really see capsules very much. And this is one of the reasons why. So it was a huge deal to have these capsules. That's how most of these drugs were made. Again, they had no seal on them whatsoever. There was just a piece of cotton in there. And so essentially, if anyone put those two things together, it makes sense that someone kind of dark and twisted could go through and buy these, use these, and kind of go and put them back on the shelves. Like they have an idea of how this works or what could potentially happen. They start posting about what happened to the first victim, Mary Kellerman, the 12-year-old, and they start putting police outside of her grave and outside of their house to watch if anyone goes back and forth to see what's going on. No one ever shows up because they think at one point that the killer or whoever's doing this is going to show up just to visit his victims. No one ever shows up. Okay. A surveillance camera is found of Paula Prince, who is the flight attendant, where she is purchasing the cyanide. And behind her, there is a man with a receding hairline and a beard kind of watching her closely, and they think that this could potentially be a suspect. In the beginning, there is an investigation, and in a couple days after this happens, Johnson & Johnson receives a letter basically demanding $1 million to stop the cyanide murders. The man, his name is James. I won't say the rest of his name because he doesn't deserve anything.
Amen.
When he is arrested, because he doesn't do a very good job of this, they catch him right away. He says that he's not the person behind the attacks. He just knows how they were happening and that he wrote the letter over a period of like 3 days to send to Johnson & Johnson. There's also some other stuff about this guy that we'll get into. His wife potentially used to work for Johnson & Johnson. So it might be kind of a revenge thing. And he basically says the whole thing, that people go out, they buy the bottles, they open these capsules up, they put cyanide in them, they reseal the capsules, put the bottles back out there. And he basically talks through what he thinks the process is that these cyanide poisonings are happening. But he never said he did any of this. They go to his home and he has a book in his house about poisoning. And according to some documents, his fingerprints were found on specific pages talking about cyanide. But he still denies that he had anything to do with the poisoning. He was just writing the letter. He said it took him 3 days. During his trial, the attorneys claimed that he was intending to focus the attention of the authorities on his wife's former employer, so Johnson & Johnson. He was convicted of extortion, but not of murder, and sentenced to 10 years in prison. They never find his fingerprints on any of the bottles. They never find his DNA on any of the bottles.
Well, he probably just wore gloves.
Potentially, yeah. Authorities determined that the letter was postmarked on October 1st, meaning that if Lewis's three-day timeline was accurate, he started the letter before any of the murders were reported because they happened on the 28th and they died on the 29th. When he's confronted with this information, he recants his timeline and says that wasn't accurate. He goes to jail for 10 years. In 2009, they start opening up another investigation into this guy. They don't have enough evidence to charge him. And in 2010, they go through and do some initial research where they get DNA from him and his wife and fingerprints. And they don't find DNA and they don't have anything that links him to anything. He died, actually. James died on July 9th, 2023 at the age of 76. So he died very, very recently.
Yeah. So when they went to do the additional investigation, was it still in the topic of the Tylenol murders, or was there something else they were looking at him for?
They were looking at the Tylenol murders. They are still considered unsolved today.
Wow.
Another thing that comes up about James is he was accused of a murder after remains were found in his attic, but the charges were dropped because the search from the police was illegal and you can't do that. So that all that evidence cannot be used against
what?
Him.
What?
Yeah.
Just a casual dead person in your attic, but...
And it was, I think, a former employer or a former client of his or something like that. So he knew the person. It wasn't just like a random body.
Okay. Red flag on red flag.
Uh-huh. But again, his DNA never matches. They never have enough evidence to convict him that he did the murders. They also investigated another man named Roger. Again, not saying his last name because he's a bad guy too. Because he was reported by a bar owner. This bar owner said that the man was talking to him that he had, and bragging that he had killed people and that he had possession of potassium cyanide. And he was not a great person. He talked about how he knew how this was happening. And he worked with one of the victim's fathers at a warehouse. So he knew one of the victims. He was, I believe, with his wife at the hospital, and the hospital was across the street from one of the stores where the drugs were purchased from. Oh. So there's a whole thing there. They search his house, and they find the poor man's James Bond book, which contained instructions for making potassium cyanide, was found in his house. And he was held by police on several times, never charged, never went to jail for this. But about a year later, he kills a man who he thinks is the bar owner who reported him originally. He shoots and kills this man, and he goes to jail for killing this man.
Revenge. So were they investigating Roger at the same time as the other guy, or was this a different period? Okay.
So these were all within a few months of each other because they're just trying to search for as many people as possible.
Right. They had some legitimate leads here.
Yeah. But none of them were matching up. They couldn't find DNA evidence or anything like this.
Yep.
He dies in 2008. And he says while he's in prison, and I think he served 15 years of his 30-year sentence for second-degree murder, which is crazy. He says from prison that he killed a man, a perfectly innocent man. I had choices. I could have walked away. So he seems like he's regretful for the man that he killed, but he was in jail as well. Yeah. In 2010 and 2009, the investigation is reopened, and they go search the home of Lewis in Cambridge. And they seized a number of items from his place. They exhume their bodies to take DNA, and they still find no match for either one of those two men. On the 25th anniversary of this event happening, they get a ton of people calling in with tips and tricks. None of them lead anywhere. And they still don't have any solve to any of these cases.
Wow.
In 2011, the FBI requested DNA samples from the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, in connection to the Tylenol murders. And the reason they do this is his parents' home, which he visited pretty frequently, was about 20 minutes away from where the rest of these murders happened.
Yeah.
And he stayed there with them occasionally. Additionally, in his manifesto that he wrote, he talked about his dislike of drug companies and pills. And a similar murder happened in Wyoming, which was close to where he lived at the time. It's not just in Chicago. Hundreds of copycat attacks start happening across the nation. And they're all very similar to the Chicago one. So two more deaths happened in 1986 from gelatin capsules. A 23-year-old died in Yonkers, New York, after having extra strength Tylenol laced with cyanide several years later. Excedrin pills have been tampered with, resulting in the deaths of two people and the eventual arrest of one of those people's wives, who then was accused of tampering the pills, and she went to jail for those both of those murders. The same year, another company had pills recalled after multiple deaths, a hoax that happened in Chicago and Detroit. So someone basically said they were doing this again, and they weren't, but it recalled a huge amount of products. I think that product basically disappeared. It never got its money back.
Oh my gosh.
There's two other ones that happened related to Sudafed in 1991. And that actually goes to the husband, who was convicted on numerous charges, and he was abusive towards his wife, who he later kills due to these tampered pills. And someone tampers pills and uses it as a method of suicide in the University of Texas. So this was very, very widespread, because once people heard about it, they realized they could do it and there was nothing stopping them, and they kind of went and started doing it.
Oh, no.
Johnson & Johnson received a ton of coverage about this because obviously it does not look very good for Johnson & Johnson.
Yep.
But they behaved really, really well. They established connections with people right away. They worked with the FBI, local Chicago police, the FDA to kind of establish what's going on. And they basically were giving as much information as they could. The company had a huge drop in profits. And I believe they went from like 30% to like 8% of the market, which was huge for them.
Right.
And obviously all the stuff that was gathered, they had to throw away because they didn't know what was and wasn't tampered with. The company's market share collapsed from 35% to 8%. It rebounded in less than a year, which was good. But part of the reason it rebounded was because how open and their communication was with everybody. And that was a really big deal. And they are now, I think, the highest market share for the overall counter painkillers.
Yeah, that sounds like a familiar brand.
Yeah, we all know Tylenol. Acetaminophen is what most people take when they're kind of not feeling well. They were eventually sued by a laboratory that they were kind of owning because of this loss. And that lawsuit was basically dropped because they said, well, you could have had better insurance. You didn't have better insurance. And Tylenol said, we had no way of knowing that someone would do this. Like, how can we be held responsible?
Right.
So they weren't held responsible. And they still talk about how they reacted to this as kind of like the gold star of what to do when you have those types of reactions or those types of problems. And you see now that there is a big fight against recalls when they happen, especially in the food market, when people oftentimes have to kind of get forced to recall things and they're not always very open or communicative about why they're recalling things. And the FDA has to issue those recalls pretty frequently.
For sure.
So this caused some things to happen a little bit further down the road. In 1982, when this event happened, this caused the Congress to act immediately, and they started passing laws and working on things to prevent this from happening in the future. So in 1983, a law making it a federal crime to tamper with customer products, because at the time it wasn't a federal crime, was passed, and that's basically the Tylenol bill is what it was called. So if you tampered with products, it was a federal crime, not a local crime or a state crime, you could go to serious jail time then. And it took until 1989, so by the time I was born at least, for the FDA to set laws for all over-the-counter products to be tamper-resistant. So that's where you start to see everyone has to have those foils, everyone has to have a seal, and you start to see labels that start to say those are actually required.
Got it.
This also caused the pharmaceutical industry to move away from capsules. They were an easy way to contaminate with foreign substances, and they could be placed back inside. You wouldn't be able to notice, even if you had a new package, you could tamper with one and put it back in a pill bottle, and it was pretty easy to do, which was dangerous. So within the year, the FDA introduced more stringent regulations to avoid product tampering, and this kind of got rid of the capsules. You don't see capsules much anymore. They call them caplets, and they are solid, but they look like a capsule, so they kind of work differently. And this is basically the most common way you see drugs now. You don't see capsules very much anymore.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is like liquid gels. I feel like those still exist, but that has a gel inside.
Yeah, and well, and they also, I don't think you can reseal them. So if punch us a liquid gel, that like it's obvious that it was punctured.
Yep.
When I was younger, I had a really hard time taking pills. I don't know, I just couldn't do it until I was like well into my teens. I used to take liquid gels and poke a hole in it and just kind of like try to suck the stuff out from inside of it. So that's when you start to see all these tamper-proof safety seals introduced. At the same time, this happened in September, right before Halloween. And for some reason, this kicked up concerns about tampered with Halloween candy. So trick-or-treaters actually saw this huge fall the same year. And grocery stores reported that candy sales were down 20 to 30%.
Wow. Yeah, now you have me thinking about everything that I eat and what's sealed and what's not.
Yeah. And one day we're going to talk about that as a topic, about the true story about what happened with tampered with candy, because
I grew up knowing
about that one. But there's a true story behind that as well. Because of this, there's lots of podcasts have covered this. There are TV specials and a documentary were made to talk about this whole event. The documentary is called Painkiller, The Tylenol Murders, and it's on Paramount Plus now for streaming. So if you want to go watch it, you can go watch it. And it's really interesting.
Okay.
And then we still test for cyanide and strychnine. We look at that in food products. We look at it in water and in soil because it is still used and it is still out there. And so we still test to make sure it's not in ingredients.
Thank goodness.
So that's the kind of horrifying unsolved Tylenol murders.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now I'm going to maybe take a step back on what medications I take.
Just check your bottles. That's all I say.
All right.
But yeah, if you ever get frustrated with like childproof tampering or any of those things and how hard they are to open or opening up those seals, that's why we have all this, is because this event happened.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, okay, am I a child? Because I can't get the tops off of things sometimes.
I get really frustrated with like the foil coatings because I can never open those. They have that stupid little tab on the side that says, you know, you peel from here and to open it. That doesn't work. It's a lie.
I stick my long nail in it and it pokes it. But the like push and twist ones, that's what I can't ever figure out.
Yeah. But those kind of things that are like so frustrating. And when I have talked to people before and been like, oh my gosh, this bottle is mostly a ball of cotton. There's not really many pills in here. It's all cotton. And it's like, oh, this is why. So they know exactly how many are in there. You can't mess with it. You can't open it because everything that linked to here.
Good to know. Well, let's lighten the mood a little and wrap up with our What Are You Eating segment. This is where we discuss what we're consuming this week, whether it's food, pop culture, or anything we can't stop consuming.
Brittany, what are you eating this week?
So based on our conversation last week and trying to have the effort of not wasting food, I decided to try a food delivery service. Okay. So last week, Friday, I put in my delivery for Home Chef, and it actually was a brilliant idea because it saved me time and money on, first of all, picking out recipes and then going to the store and buying my groceries. And every recipe comes with the ingredients exactly what you need for the recipe. So I had no waste this week, which was really cool.
Oh, good for you. And we are not sponsored. However, we are happy to take a sponsorship. Looking for a sponsorship. Do you order it where it's like a meal for two or for 2 days? How do you do it?
Yeah, so there's lots of different options. You can order a certain amount of food. So I did like, it's just me again this week. So I just ordered three different meals. And then the smallest portion you can get is for two meals. So I'll just cook it, eat one for lunch, one for dinner. But you can do it for a whole family. And they have like fast cooking options where it's like you just put it in the microwave. But I like to cook everything fresh. So I'll do like the full recipe. But then they also have family style. So you can do like a big pasta for four people. So there's lots of different options. But for me, it just saves me time going to the grocery store. So I liked that.
I have a couple of friends who've used it before and they've gone through like vegetarian options because they want to try eating a little bit healthier. Yeah. And I always, I'm like, okay, I want to do this, but I don't want to have so much food that I have leftovers because I only eat leftovers for like 1 or 2 days before. Yeah. I'm just like, I can't do this. I'm over it, which is what causes some food waste on my end. But I don't know. Maybe you're convincing me to give it a try.
Yeah, I really like it. There's lots of different brands. I think there's like Blue Apron, HelloFresh. I've tried a lot of different ones, but this Home Chef, I'm pretty new to this. And I think the quality of the meat and the recipes are a little bit more exciting to me. So
could you like, I mean, they give you like recipe cards and stuff, right?
Yes. So it tells you exactly how to do it, how long to cook everything for. It has every seasoning, like oil, whatever you need for the ingredients. It comes included and packaged. So it's really nice.
So do you think you could go out and repeat this again? Like, is it actual ingredients you can go find in a store?
Yeah. I save the recipe cards. So I have a little book that I like save recipe cards. I still have ones that I liked from other delivery services. But like we like a lot of meat and different pastas. So it's like very easy to, okay, I need this meat, this pasta, and this seasoning. And then it's just like, you can recreate them pretty easy.
Yeah, I've bought like some like cookbooks and recipe books, and then I'm like reading through it. I'm like, I don't know where to find this. What is this? Yeah. Like, they're asking for an ingredient that I can't find in a grocery store. So I'm like, this is not helpful to me.
I agree. There are some recipes that have like weird ingredients. One thing that I was always on Blue Apron would always use bok choy, which is like in different soups and Asian dishes. But I always had a hard time finding it in grocery stores. So that was kind of annoying. But
I grew up, my mom is Mexican, so I grew up eating a lot of Mexican food. And where I lived, we could find it, the ingredients kind of everywhere. But in Pennsylvania, I can't find some of those ingredients.
Yeah.
Like masa, I used to be able to find masa in every single grocery store I went to. I can't find them in grocery stores here. And it drives me crazy because I'll have cravings for like my grandma's cooking or my mom's cooking. And I'm like, well, I just don't have the ingredients to make it happen here.
Yeah, I agree.
I ordered it off of Amazon.
I feel like that about when I go to Trader Joe's, there's like specific recipes I want to cook and they only have like, you know, the very basic of each ingredient. I'm like looking for a specific cheese with this specific flavor. And so then I end up going to like three different grocery stores and it's just frustrating.
And this is why we resort to girl dinner, like we talked about earlier, where we're just eating whatever we can put our hands on.
Literally. Okay, so what are you eating?
Okay, so mine is not a food. Do you like scary movies or horror movies or anything like that?
I like thrillers and like movies that have like strategy to them.
Okay. I love scary movies, whether it's a serial killer, a monster, or whatever it is, but I am a giant wuss. Like, if I watch them, I cannot sleep. I'm like a little kid. I'll have nightmares.
Yeah.
So I always want to watch these movies because they seem really cool. I just can't do it. I found a podcast, and it's called Too Scary, Didn't Watch. And I was like, wait a minute. This sounds down my alley.
Yeah.
And it is three women. Emily Gonzalez, Henley Cox, and Sammy Smart. And two of them are the same way as me. They like scary movies, but they can't watch them. And one of them loves scary movies. And one will watch the movie. Sammy will watch the movie and then tell the other two basically the plot of the movie and go through the whole movie. So they know what happens, but they don't have to watch the movie. There's, I think, over 300 episodes. I listened to them all within like a 3-week period of time. It's all I listen to.
Oh my God.
And so I've caught up on all my scary movies that I'm too afraid to watch. I've sent them suggestions for movies that I'm like, well, I want to know what happens in this movie, but I'm too scared to watch it. So can you do it? And they're so funny. They are also horrified by the same types of things I'm horrified about. And sometimes they will talk about like, oh, I can't listen to this part of it because Henley just has a couple kids. She has a very young child recently. And she's like, I can't listen to this. I'm a mother. But she, of course, listens to it. And so it's very relatable. And it's very fun to listen to. And occasionally one of them can't be there. So one of the girls who doesn't like scary movies has to watch the scary movie and report it to the other ones. And it's pretty funny.
That's a good concept. I need to get back into my podcast game. But yeah, that's perfect for you.
And the only bad thing is I've only been listening to that podcast. So I've ignored all my other podcasts. So now I am playing this huge catch-up game to where like, oh, I had like 6 episodes of this one and 6 episodes of this one. And they changed how podcasts work. So if you don't listen to them, they don't automatically download. So I was like, I'm only behind like 6 or 7 podcasts. And then I'm like, no, it stopped downloading. I'm behind so much further. So now I'm trying to play catch up. And it's a full-time job in taking pop culture and media.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing except for like all my girly reality shows because my boyfriend's out of town. So I can like watch The Bachelor and like Love is Blind and everything that he doesn't want to watch. So I'm like, okay, come on, all the episodes come out so I can watch them before he gets home.
I love The Bachelor. I love The Golden Bachelor. I think there's a Golden Bachelorette that's going to happen right now. So when that happens, we are going to talk about that pretty extensively. It's such a good show. And I'm disgusted as I like to watch it, but also I'm like ready to talk about it.
It's like, you can't look away. It's pretty good. Okay.
All right. We have any other questions? Any other topics we have to talk about?
I think that's it.
Yeah. No other pop culture. Did you go buy Girl Scout cookies?
No, I didn't. I feel like I had a dream about cookies now that you say that though, because we discussed it. I need to get some. I don't know. Just trying to be strong.
I'm going to be the devil on your shoulder and tell you that you need them for your own happiness.
I've been getting – okay, so my favorite dessert is chocolate lava cake, and you can typically only get that at like a nice steakhouse. Mm-hmm. But I found them at Trader Joe's, and they're really good. And you just pop them in the oven, and they taste like just like you would at a high-end steakhouse. And so, yeah, that's my little problem right now.
And I feel like you have to eat the whole thing at once. You can't.
You do. It's like, break, yeah, warm and gooey on the inside for sure. Yeah.
I'm here to support you.
All right. Okay. Well, I think that wraps up for today.
Yeah. I can't wait for our next one. And in the meantime, go get some Girl Scout cookies and a chocolate lava cake.
You got it.
This has been Okay, But Why? A Microback Laboratories podcast. Microback Laboratory operates the largest network of privately held testing facilities in the United States, providing broad analytical offerings and testing insights across the environmental, food, and life science markets.
A company with more than 50 years experience honing its craft, Microback is on a mission to improve the world around us one test at a time.
To learn more about Microback testing services and this podcast, please visit microback.com.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Your support means the world to us. If you want to stay updated on all of our latest episodes, make sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed today's show, leave us a review. Thank you.